Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. There's a central fiber that runs through the scriptures, and that is a love for humanity and a returning good for evil. Now that's kind of contrary to our nature, though. Agape love is not something that comes natural to us. It does not come natural for us to overcome evil with good. But we're Christians. We have the power of God living within us, and so we're responsible to return good for evil. In Matthew chapter 5, we start reading at verse 38. Non-resistance in light of everyday living. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. If you're writing your Bible, I'd like you to write beside verse 48, perfect in love. Okay? He didn't say that we're going to be sinless, but the context is that of love. And so we are to be perfect in love. What we have been given has been more than we can fathom. He that has been given much, let him extend much to others. We love, we forgive, only because we have been loved and we have been forgiven. The Jewish culture said that there was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I remember growing up thinking about that. My brother, he deserves the same that he just gave me. And the next time I get the opportunity, I'm going to do that to him. My parents were sure to tell me that that's not the way it works. But you know, we remembered that the Bible said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Well, in the Old Testament, when they said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, they were allowed to have an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But if I had my eye knocked out, I was not allowed to knock somebody else's eye out. The person that hit me was dealt with by the judges. I did not have the right to go and knock his eye out. Because what would have happened if I went to knock his eye out, I would have more than knocked one out. Why? Because there was emotion that was involved in my life. He had punched me. He knocked my eye out. Yes, he deserved to have his eye knocked out, but there was emotion with me because I had been violated. And so to save that, the judges needed to make the decision, was this valid? Does this person get their eye knocked out? And then they appointed someone to knock the eye out. Does that make sense to us? The emotion that gets a part of us when there's a retaliatory spirit, okay? And so in the Old Testament, it clearly said in Exodus 21, a life for a life, yes. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Clearly spelled out. But Jesus came and said, we have a different way. Jesus said, it's not equal payment for equal crime as a Christian. We are a Christian. We have the love of God in our hearts. And so he starts out and says, resist not evil. Whosoever smites you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. Now put your hand on your right cheek. Can you do that for me? 90% of the world's population is right-handed. So the computer says. I had a friend of mine check it for me. And he said, statistics say that 90% of us are right-handed. So now I'm going to come down here and I'm going to hit Conrad on the right cheek. It says if somebody hits you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. So if I came down to hit Conrad on the right cheek, how would I do that? You see the hand? You see the side he's holding? I can't up and wallop Conrad on the right cheek. I have to go like this, right? I have to backhand him in order to touch his right cheek. If I'm a right-handed person. Jesus is saying, if somebody backhands you, if somebody does something in violation of your rights, some feeling of yours is going to be aroused, but you have the privilege of turning the other cheek and allowing him to wallop you on the other cheek, which is the left cheek. Now, a cheek's pretty sensitive, and when somebody slaps us in the cheek, it feels pretty serious. It's not the same as stealing our possession. It's not the same as violating us with words. But when somebody touches our cheek, that's pretty sensitive. When somebody spits in our face, that's pretty disgusting, but it's pretty sensitive area. Okay? Jesus said if somebody does that to you, you as a believer, a follower of Jesus Christ, have the power, the love in your heart to take that and offer more of the same. And I'm reminded in the Bible where it says, a soft answer turneth away wrath. And I remember people who have tried to put me in the corner and put, you do too, put you in the corner. They tried to do things to you and speak to you in ways that are just very ungodly. And you've kind of swallowed and you've kind of said, God, you got to help me in this. And finally, when you say, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't mean to disturb you in this way, and I'm sorry you're so upset about this, it kind of takes the fire out of it for them. And you walk away and say, God, thank you. I didn't know what to do in this situation, but you've said that a soft answer will turn away wrath, and you said that your love is more powerful than hatred, more powerful than anything else that we see people using. And so Jesus said that as believers who are trying to carry out our Christian lives in everyday living, that we need to remember the love that we have, the power that we have through the love of Christ. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 40, he says, and if any will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Now, if somebody wanted to sue you, and they had reason to sue you, and to win the suit, and you had to give up your coat, which is your inner garment. Cloak here is outer garment. Again, if you want to write that in your Bible, keep it straight for you. The coat is the inner garment, which is close to you. It's the very covering up of yourself. The coat is more for warmth. Okay? If somebody takes what you have that is close to you, your very dress, if somebody robs you by a lawsuit, then you are to turn around and give them your outer garment, which in the Old Testament was not allowed to be taken. In the Old Testament, it says that that cloak could be taken for a day as a security that you would do what you said. But when nightfall comes, you needed to give that cloak back so that the person had warmth to sleep. Okay? So now Jesus is saying, I'm going to even change that. If somebody takes your inner coat, garment, I'm asking that you give your cloak as well, that you give more than they ask of you. Illustration. I have four sons. We have four sons, and they have mowed yards for years for people. And one day, one of the sons, he was probably 13, I'm guessing, he called me at work and he said, Dad, guess what? I got a lawnmower from one of our customers that they wanted serviced, and I brought it home, and we serviced it. We sharpened the blades. We cleaned it up. We took it back to her. She was 80-some years old, and when she got the lawnmower back, she says, that's not my lawnmower. I had a different one than that. And so he said, Dad, what should I do? I said, well, I don't know. Is it her lawnmower? Yeah, it's her lawnmower. We just cleaned it up, and she doesn't recognize it. And she was having some Alzheimer's, some moments of forgetting, and she thought she had a self-propelled mower, and this one was not a self-propelled mower. And come to find out, her husband had had a self-propelled mower, because when this lady sold her property, we went and we bought some things or got some things from them, and here was the manual of a self-propelled mower. It wasn't the one that... Anyway, what do you do about this? So I said, son, well, we'll talk to her about it. So she said, you, as a minister, you have a son that stole that lawnmower. He stole my good lawnmower and replaced it with less. And now he's probably going to go sell my lawnmower and make a lot of money on it. I'm not very happy about it. I'm going to tell some people in the community about you. So what do? So we called her son, who's 60-some years old, and he said, I'll come up and we'll talk about it. So the night came where she came to our study, and this man came, her son came with her. And I said, what do we need to do to solve this situation? She says, well, I don't know. I said, I just need my lawnmower back. And I said, well, I'm sorry, we don't have another lawnmower. This is the only one we have. We believe this is yours, but we want to make you happy. What can we do? So she said, well, buy me another lawnmower. Okay, so how much is it going to take to buy you another lawnmower? I got my checkbook out, and I'm ready to write. And I said, $250 enough? No, that's not enough money. $300 enough? No. Well, how much is enough? Well, she thought $500 would be all right. What would you do? What do we do? It wasn't ours to give. Or was it ours to give? Which was it? Non-resistance in everyday life. Which was it? So the pen wrote the $500, and we gave it to her, and she left. The next day, the son brought the check back and says, Mom's going through Alzheimer's, and she doesn't know, but I brought the check back, and I'm in charge of the finances, so don't worry. Okay? But even if I would have lost, we would have lost the $500. Would have that been the Christian thing to do? According to Jesus' teaching, if someone takes you to the law and sues you, then let him have your coat and let him have your cloak. In verse 41, it says, whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him 2 miles. In that culture, it was so that the soldier could come up to a Jewish person and say, carry my knapsack, carry it 1 mile. And by law, he needed to carry it 1 mile. Jesus said, go beyond the call of duty, carry it the second mile. When you get to the end of the mile, say to him, hey, I'll carry it another mile. Show him your willingness to be a servant. Brothers and sisters, is that what makes the difference in whether people view Christianity as something attractive or not? When you go beyond the call of duty, when you're there in a time of need, is that what makes Christianity attractive? I get people on the billboard calls for canned billboards who say, Christianity has been the ruin of our society. Christianity is all farce. You know, what do they think about all the hospitals and all the aid and all the things that have been done across America because people of Christian faith sacrificed? If they take and account all of that, they may have a different picture, but they're not stopping to think about that. They're thinking that Christianity is just a crutch and it's a opium of the people. It's just kind of getting them to a place of it's medicine, you know. So there's a problem here. But when a Christian shows that he is willing to sacrifice, when he shows that he's willing to go the extra mile, when he's willing to reach out, when he doesn't have to reach out, it's a powerful, powerful testimony. And you've done it. We've done it. As churches, gotten together and helped someone in the community rebuild a house or help them in a time of need with a medical bill. Powerful, powerful. That's Christianity in shoe leather. That's dealing with our neighbors in a way that they can see Christ. Non-resistance in everyday living. Am I willing to go the second mile? Verse 42, give to him that asketh of thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Everything except your toothbrush should be loanable. They need a toothbrush, we'll buy them a toothbrush. But you understand the point. What we have is only ours to use. What we have is only bestowed upon us for this time, and it can be destroyed in a moment. Fire, accident. What we have is to be used for the furtherance of the kingdom of God. Am I willing to give to him that asks of thee from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. And you've had situations, I've had situations, where people have come and asked for things, and you wondered, is it the right thing to give to them? And we need to ask ourselves the question, have we shut up our bowels of compassion toward them, or are we willing to overflow and to give beyond even what they have asked? So Christ is giving a plan for the Christians here in Matthew chapter 5, and he's telling us that we are going to go beyond what the Old Testament did. We're going to go beyond what the non-Christian would even expect. And what it said there in this passage is that the publicans, they give love to those who love them, and that's expected. We can pay back what we have hurt, but remember Zacchaeus, he gave back four times what he had taken, and what a testimony it was to those that he was in association with. What a testimony Zacchaeus must have left. And then it says here that we are to bless those that curse you. We are to, instead of wishing mischief on someone else, we're to do something to make them see that we have forgiven and are willing to move on. Now I'd like you to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the love chapter. We'll make a few practical things for everyday living based on this passage. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, I'm just going to look at verses 4 through 8. We know Jesus is our example of suffering, and we don't enjoy suffering. We know Jesus is the example of being selfless. Let's read. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. Doth not behave itself unseemingly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. Verse 4, charity suffereth long and is kind. A non-resistant person will pray for the grace to suffer and to then be kind, though abused and wronged. 18th century Switzerland, Peter, Pastor Peter in Switzerland, 18th century, sleeping in his bed at night, hears the men throwing the thatch off his roof. Remember the account, some of you? And wakes up and tells his wife, "Honey, I know it's 3 o'clock in the morning," whatever time it was, however he said it to her, "please get something together to feed the men that are working so hard on our roof." And she gets a meal together, and he goes out and says, "Men, you've been working so hard. Come in and enjoy a meal with us." And the men came in and sat at his table, and they couldn't eat. They were so stricken. They went out. They put the thatch back on his roof and left. It had heaped coals of fire on their heads. It had been an act that was undescribable, unbelievable, that somebody would do that. And yet, that's what he's calling us to. Charity suffereth long. We will pray for the grace to suffer and to be kind, though abused and wronged. My brother went to pick up a bed for me when I started to batched for 3 years. And on the wet mountain highway, he went around a corner and saw three men walking up the road in the center of the road. And he skidded and went into the ditch skidding so as not to hit them. Two men jumped to the other side, but the one boy jumped right in front of him, and just as the van in the ditch is skidding along to a stop, it hits the boy. Immediately, the father of the boy, who was on the other side of the road, came up with a gun and put it at the window. Said son, and he held him there. My brother was 16 years old. He held him there, and he said, "You're in trouble." The gun's at his head. Is in a mountain road. What's he going to do? Is the man going to fire, or isn't he going to fire? Well, there was a boy with my brother, and he got out somehow. And when the next car came by, he got a ride back to our farm, which was about 3 miles or so, and got my dad. By that time, the ambulance had been called, and the police came, and the man was questioned by the police, as was my brother. And, of course, when the police came, there was no gun around. The gun had gone out of sight, and so the police didn't know about the gun until he questioned my brother, and my brother said that he had threatened him with a gun, and he said, "Oh, okay." And so, anyway, through the whole deal, the man sued our family $10,000 for mental anguish. That was what's on the thing, mental anguish, because the boy was hit and all. It's mental anguish. Well, a countersuit would have looked something like this. Mental anguish plus for my brother, if we would have countersued for having a gun placed inches from his head and a threat over his life. Wouldn't you say there could have been a countersuit there? Yeah. But is that the Christian way? These are tough, tough things. These are tough, tough things. What do we do? Do we have the grace to love a person through that experience? Fortunately, that man dropped the lawsuit because he was in trouble for having pulled a gun on someone, okay? If he would not have, I think my dad was prepared to sell some cows. And to his credit. And I wanted to learn from that. And it was really, he was going to get a bed for me. I should have paid the $10,000, but I couldn't have paid the $10,000, okay? What are we willing to lose to keep a Christian testimony? What are we willing to forgive and forget about to keep a Christian testimony? An Amish bishop was at an event one night, and some youth came and put rocks in the back of his buggy. When he came to go home, he saw his buggy was extra heavily laden, and he threw the rocks out, and he went on his way. 20 years later, one of those young people came back to the bishop and confessed that he had put rocks in his buggy. The bishop said, "I'm so sorry that you carried that for so long. I threw those rocks out the same night." He had carried it on his mind for 20 years until finally he came to deal with it, to take care of it. There is power in love, brothers and sisters. Let's never forget. There is power, more power in love than any kind of retaliation, any kind of even just saying tit for tat. You know, the law of tit for tat is still in play today, even though it was a Jewish law, you know, an eye for an eye. But it's not going to work for our Christianity to stand out, for us to be different, for us to be people of God. It's not going to work. And so as we go through life and the everyday experience, we have to ask ourselves the question, is my life anything different than my neighbor's life, than the non-Christian member's life? And so it says here in verse 4, suffereth long and is kind. Am I willing to suffer the verbal assaults that come? Am I willing to refrain from lawsuits and to avoid even causing someone to go there? Am I willing to settle out of court at whatever the cost to keep from going there? We've been forgiven so much. Are we willing to deal with these situations in a way that would bring peace as quickly and as completely as possible? A challenge, because we work for our money. We think we earn it. But who is it that gives us strength to earn the money? It is God. It can be taken from us through sickness. It can be taken from us through so much. Hang on to it loosely and let it just bring peace. Whatever the cost, let it bring peace. It is not wasteful. It is not a lack of good stewardship. When we are out to save a soul, it is not a lack of good stewardship. And so a non-resistant person must pray for the grace to do that, to be willing to suffer, and to be kind, though abused and wronged. Then it says here about the thing of jealousy. It talks here about the spirit of pride, you know, vaunting, vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. We don't envy other people. We're not puffed up. We don't go into a place of business as an employee and work and try to get somebody else's position ruthlessly. Try to get somebody else's position. In the church, we don't try to ruthlessly get somebody else's position. We are servants. We're not going to be envious of someone who has a position that we would like to have. We're not going to be envious of a person for the resources that they have that we don't have. We're going to say, God has me right here, right now, for this job, whatever I'm supposed to represent, however I'm supposed to represent him, I am willing to do that. We're not here for personal glory. Then he goes on in verse 5, says, doth not behave itself unseemingly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil. Oh, am I willing to refrain from being demanding and being irritable, from thinking up evil things about other people? We talk about refrain from being demanding. There are certain things we won't do. In everyday life, we will not do because it would be a show of force. We'll never join the labor union because the labor union only survives with the threat of force, right? If the labor union would not have a threat of force, it would fall to pieces. So we're not going to join the labor union. We're not going to participate in labor strikes. We're not going to go against our boss. We're going to be content with our wages. I shudder to go to a boss and say, I need more wages. I'm not sure. I think we need on our knees pray for our what we need. Shudder to go to a boss and to challenge him in a task that he has assigned me to do and say, I don't want to do it your way. I want to do it my way. We might have the better way. When we can go and approach in a right spirit and an appeal, but when he tells us to do something, we do it. We obey the boss instead of standing up against him or talking about his decision behind his back. We respect our fellow employees. We keep from having a quarrelsome disposition. We don't get angry quickly. We're not out to find the bad in other people. No, a person who is seeking to be non-resistant in everyday life has a spirit of charity. He has a spirit that says, I've been forgiven so much, I've been loved so much, I now need to extend that to mankind. Others need to be our focus. Verse 6, rejoiceth not in iniquity. We do not rejoice when somebody else falls. As we said this morning, we're there to help build someone up, to encourage them, to help them out of their pit, out of their trial, and bring them to a place that they are going in the right direction again. Verse 7, beareth all things. We as Christians have a responsibility to check how patient we are, to bear long with the hardships that may come, or the things that are not fair to us. God always has a way of dealing with that. God always has a way of making things right. And if it's not in this life, is that okay? God will bring it to justice. So, Jesus was a perfect example. He didn't resist the soldiers when they took him to the cross. He didn't talk back to them in an inappropriate way. He actually said, Father, forgive them. Jesus spread his arms and died on that cross for you and for me and accomplished the greatest work that could ever have been done. Amen? On the cross, because of an act of non-resistance in practical, everyday life. There's not a soldier that could have said Jesus didn't live up to what he had preached. There's not a soldier that when Jesus resurrected came back and said, you're a fake. No. They knew there was something genuine about him. And oh, for the grace of God to extend that love to a world that doesn't know that love. To extend the love and the forgiveness to a world that will just be shaken to their core when they see it lived out in a practical way of life. Love overcomes evil. And it should be a motivating force in our response to others. J.R. Mumall said, "The successfully non-resistant life is a perpetual demonstration of the power and the grace of God." We can't do it in and of our own. But I challenge you. I challenge myself. Is non-resistance something that I cultivate and that I'm willing to practice so that Christ might be seen in me? We're a representative. May we be tried in the fire and found purer gold and more luminous so that the world can see Christ reflected in us in a deeper way. May God bless you.